A little more than 500 miles north in the Pierre Hotel in Manhattan, Sandra disconnected her cell phone and tucked it in her handbag. Her hand was shaking. She had been prepared for another argument with Walter, like the ones that had eventually led to the end of their marriage.
How long are you going to keep up with this, Sandra? When are you going to face facts? We still have our lives and two other children. We owe it to Henry and Charlotte and our grandchildren to move on. You've become obsessed.
But they hadn't had any fights like that since Walter came home from work to find her in the bedroom, struggling to close a very full suitcase. Protesting, he had carried it down to the waiting car. As she got into it, she said,
I can't deal with you any longer. Goodbye.
Sandra was relieved that today's conversation hadn't led to another confrontation. Still, as she walked down Sixth Avenue, something was bothering her. Walter had quickly gone along with being involved if Lori Moran made Amanda's disappearance the next case in the Under Suspicion series, but she knew that reliving it moment by moment as the investigation began would tear him apart.
I'm sorry, Walter, she said aloud, but if I get the chance to have Amanda's disappearance examined, I'm going to go through with it, come hell or high water.
9. In Brett Young's office at Fisher Blake Studios, Lori was making her strongest pitch to feature the runaway bride case in their next special. She began by laying the button that Sandra had given her on Brett's desk. Normally, she would have brought 8x10 glossies, but today she was working on the fly. You might recognize her photograph. Her name is Amanda Pierce. 5 years after her disappearance, her mother, Sandra, still wears these buttons. Raising his eyebrows, Brett inched the button toward him for closer inspection, but said nothing. New Yorkers Amanda Pierce and Jeff Hunter had plans for a luxurious destination wedding. The ceremony was planned for Saturday afternoon, to be followed by a lavish reception. The wedding would be fairly intimate, 60 of their closest friends and family. But the wedding never happened, she continued. On Friday morning before the Saturday afternoon wedding, the bride, Amanda Pierce, did not show up for breakfast. Her fiancé and maid of honor knocked on the door of her room. There was no answer. A security guard let them in. The bed had not been slept in. Her wedding dress was spread across it. The night before, the bridal party had had dinner together. That was the last time they saw Amanda. Lori could tell she had Brett's attention now. They started to worry. They checked the hotel gym, the beach, the restaurant, the lobby, everywhere they could think of to look for her. Jeff went to the front desk to ask if housekeeping had already made up Amanda's room. The clerk checked, and just as he said no, Amanda's parents arrived in the lobby. They had to hear from Jeff that their daughter was missing. She's never been heard from again. Brett snapped his fingers.
I knew her face looked familiar. This is that runaway bride thing, right? Didn't she turn up in Vegas with some other guy?
Lori vaguely recalled a similar story a few years back along those lines, but assured him that it wasn't the Amanda Pierce case. Amanda vanished without a trace. People don't run away for over 5 years.
Without a trace? As in no body? No clues at all? Doesn't sound promising.
It's a cold case. That's what we do, Brett.
But this one is ice cold. We're talking igloo at the North Pole. Let me guess. The person you were talking to before the meeting was the button-wearing mother? I ran into her in the elevator.
Before she could answer, he said,
You're a sucker for a sad story, Lori. I can't green-light a special just so you can give a platform to the sobbing family. We need clues. We need suspects. I'm sure you want to help this mother, but as I recall, the parents weren't even there yet when the girl disappeared, right? And who are the people who have been living under suspicion since then?
Lori explained Amanda's decision to leave her trust fund to Jeff, even though they weren't married yet.
Jerry chimed in. If you go online, there are thousands of people obsessed with this case. Almost everyone thinks the groom did it and it had something to do with the money. and the facts about the will aren't even public. Not long after Amanda disappeared, he had the nerve to hook up with her best friend. They're married now, and I bet it won't be long before they spend all the money together. Not that we're biased or anything, Lori added jokingly. Of course not, Jerry said. The mention of money gave Lori another idea. The setting would be perfect, Brett. The Grand Victoria Hotel in Palm Beach. It was supposed to be a dream wedding. All travel, lodging, and entertainment paid for by the bride's wealthy family. Lori was pleased when she finally saw Brett scribble some notes. She made out the word resort, followed by dollar signs. Just as she had predicted, Brett relished the idea of a glamorous setting and financially comfortable participants. Sometimes Lori wondered if Brett would have preferred her to have created lifestyles of the rich and famous, unsolved murders. But her body was never found, Brett observed. Up until now, for all we know, Amanda Pierce is happily enjoying a new life under a new name. I would have thought, Lori, that your journalist ethics would leave you concerned about violating the woman's privacy. Lori had lost track of the number of times that her values as a reporter had clashed with Brett's unmitigated quest for ratings. Now that she was pitching a case that was perfect for television, he was finding far too much enjoyment in giving her a hard time. Actually, I've given that some thought. Even if Amanda left of her own accord, we do have victims. She walked out on her distraught family and left behind at least one innocent person suffering under the gaze of public suspicion. I'm perfectly happy if we find out the truth, no matter where that leads us.
Well, for once, you and I might be on the same page. This is a good mystery, and the story of a disappearing bride is perfect for television. A young, beautiful woman vanished into thin air from a 5-star hotel on the most important weekend of her life. I think I've been an excellent influence on you.
Undoubtedly, Lori said dryly. She was already running through the other perks of the case. Of course, Grace and Jerry would be thrilled with a setting. Lori's father, Leo, and son, Timmy, could be with them while they were on location, hopefully in August. Depending on the timing, she might be able to finish the shoot before Timmy started school again in September. Her mind had wandered to the thought of brainstorming interview sessions with Alex on the beach when Brett asked another question.
Who's on board?
The biggest challenge for their show was convincing the victim's friends and family members to participate. So far, just her mother, and supposedly the siblings and one of the bridesmaids, Lori said. She quickly added, I didn't want to reach out to anyone else until I got your approval. That sounded much better than, this case just fell in my lap this morning.
Full speed ahead. The runaway bride sounds like a runaway hit.
10. Charlotte Pierce told the waiter that she'd like to have the green salad and the salmon. And some more iced tea, she said, smiling politely as she handed him her menu. What she really wanted, of course, was a Bloody Mary and the steak frites, but she was dining with her mother, which meant she would remain on her best behavior in every way. Charlotte was all too conscious of the 15 extra pounds she was carrying these days. Unlike her siblings, she wasn't naturally slender and had to work a little harder, as her mother used to put it, to maintain a healthy weight. Ironically, Charlotte's recent weight gain was the result of all the long days she was putting in at Lady Form and the all-too-frequent fast food she ate to keep herself going.
Well, this certainly is a lovely restaurant, her mother said once the waiter was gone.
Charlotte had chosen this spot because she knew that her mother would appreciate the elegant and spacious dining room, filled with fresh flower arrangements. She had also made a point to pull her long, messy, light brown waves into a knot at the nape of her neck. Her mother always had a way of suggesting that she wear her hair in a more stylish cut. To Charlotte's ear, it sounded like her mother was wishing she were more like Amanda.
How's everything going at work? As Charlotte spelled out the plans for marketing the new line of yoga wear, including a fashion show on the cable channel New York One, her mother seemed to be only half listening.
I'm sorry, Mom. I've run on too long. Oh, no. I'm not turning into Dad, am I?
Don't even suggest it, Sandra said with a smile. Remember when the three of you set a timer to see how long he could babble about the new convertible bra?
That's right. I almost forgot.
Some of the Pierce children's biggest laughs had been at their father's expense. Big, manly Walter Pierce had no qualms talking about bras, underwear, and girdles at the dinner table, in front of their friends, or in the checkout line at the grocery store. It was all just work to him, and he loved his work. The particular incident Mom referred to was Thanksgiving, and the bra was the Lady Form 3-in-1, which converted from standard straps to strapless to a racer back. Lady Form was the first to launch that design. When it became clear that Dad was conducting yet another one of his seminars, Henry was the one to retrieve the timer from the kitchen. He, Charlotte, and Amanda had covertly passed it in a circle around the table as their father described every configuration, going so far as to use his napkin in a demonstration. By the time he realized what was going on, his children's faces were close to purple from trying to suppress laughter, and the timer had hit the 8-minute mark.
You kids always gave your father the hardest time, Sandra said, reminiscing.
Oh, he loved it. Still does, Charlotte added, reminding herself that her mother and father rarely spoke anymore. So, Mom, you called yesterday and announced that you were on your way to New York. I love seeing you, but I suspect you didn't fly across the country just to have lunch with me. It's about Amanda.
Of course it is.
Everything her parents did or said or thought was always about Amanda. Charlotte felt cruel for her immediate reaction, but the truth was that her parents had always favored Amanda, even before she disappeared. Charlotte had spent most of her life feeling less accomplished, less attractive, and less recognized than her little sister.
Things had gotten even worse once Amanda was out of college and working at Lady Form, Charlotte thought bitterly.
She had been at Lady Form 4 years before Amanda joined the company. But Amanda had come up with the idea of pairing famous female athletes with fashion designers to create high-end sports bras. After that, Dad treated Amanda as though she were Einstein reincarnated.
Amanda's idea was a great one, Charlotte thought grudgingly. The fact that I've been more than filling her job these past 5 years doesn't seem to have been noticed by either of my beloved parents.
She signaled the waiter.
When he came over, she said, "A vodka martini, please."
Then she looked at her mother.
"Okay, Mom. What about Amanda?"
11. As soon as they left Brett's office, Lori gave Jerry a light squeeze around his shoulders.
You were terrific in there. I can't believe how much you knew about the case. I was in college when Amanda Pierce disappeared. My entire dorm was completely obsessed. I think I missed 2 days of class glued to CNN. I knew then that what was supposed to be a little internship here was my true calling.
Harvey from the mailroom passed them, wheeling a cart of mail with one hand, the other occupied by a half-eaten croissant.
You're officially my favorite person at work today, Lori.
Happy to hear it, Harvey.
Once Harvey was out of earshot, Jerry said, His wife wouldn't be so happy. Last I heard, she had him on some gluten-free diet. I'm glad he's cheating a bit. The mail's been messed up all week.
Lori smiled. Jerry always seemed to know everyone's business. So how come you never suggested the runaway bride for the show if you were that into the case?
I don't know. I wasn't sure you'd like it.
Because of Greg? Jerry, once Greg's murderer was found, I had a sense of peace. Certainly not closure, but peace. That's why if our programs give other people that feeling, I'm glad.
It was true. Once she finally got the answer she'd been looking for about Greg's death, she realized that there was something comforting about certainty, a restoring of order. Though she originally created Under Suspicion purely to have a successful news program, she now saw it as a way to help other families.
Honestly, I considered suggesting Amanda's case for the show once I got promoted to assistant producer. But then when we were in Los Angeles on the Cinderella murder case, we were staying in that enormous house, and you said something about the pool being nearly as big as the one at the Grand Victoria. You looked sad thinking about it. I assumed...
He let the thought go unspoken. You assumed right, Jerry. I was there with Greg. But I'll be fine. 12. Huddled in Lori's office, the three of them, Lori, Jerry, and Grace, made a list of all the people they would need to contact before they could officially go into production with Amanda's case. Grace had never heard of either Amanda or the runaway bride, so it took Lori a few minutes to explain the case and its connection to their surprise visitor that morning.
"Well, that makes more sense now," Grace said. "Sandra called while you were in your meeting. She said I should tell you that her ex-husband, Walter, is, quote, all in."
"Excellent," Lori said, checking Amanda's father off the list. "Sandra gave me a list of all the bridal party members who were at the resort when Amanda went missing. The groom, Jeffrey Hunter, is still a public defender in Brooklyn. He's now married to Megan White, Amanda's best friend, who was also the maid of honor." Grace let out an ooh in response to the scandalous news. She liked to think that she could spot the culprit on immediate instinct.
"Don't go jumping to conclusions. We're journalists, remember?" Lori laughed. On Jeff's side of the party were his two best friends from college, Nick Young and Austin Pratt. To Sandra's knowledge, both of them are in finance, most recently here in New York, so hopefully they'll be easy to track down. The third groomsman was Amanda's older brother, Henry. I take it he's the nonconformist of the family.
Jerry was scribbling frantically.
"And what about Amanda's bridal party?"
"There's the maid of honor, Megan White.
The one who stole the groom," Grace said.
"Is currently married to the groom, yes. Amanda's sister, Charlotte, the oldest in the family, was also one of the bridesmaids. She's now their heir apparent to the family company, which is lady form, by the way."
"I love that stuff," Grace said in a whisper, as if it were a secret. "You put that on and you look two sizes smaller."
Now Lori knew how voluptuous Grace managed to fit inside those tight dresses she favored.
"Well, I got the distinct impression that Amanda was the one who was climbing up the corporate ladder before she disappeared. We might want to be on the lookout for some sibling rivalry there. And then finally, there's Kate Fulton. Sandra didn't tell me much about her, except that she already spoke to her and Kate seemed willing to appear on the show. With the exception of Amanda's siblings, the others in the bridal party went to school together at Colby College in Maine. Sandra Pierce strongly believes that they would cooperate."
"I can check Facebook and LinkedIn to see if they're connected online," Jerry said. He was an expert at using social networks to gather background material. "I'll also get contact information for everyone, but that's just the wedding party. We're also going to need to call the Grand Victoria. Part of the strength of the case from a television perspective is the location."
"I'm worried about that," Lori told him. "The hotel may not want the publicity of reminding people that Amanda disappeared."
"Except there was never any indication that there was any fault by the hotel. If anything, I think the case proves that successful people with excellent taste choose it for something as important as a wedding, not to mention all the gorgeous shots of the property that we'll include in the production."
"Nice pitch, Jerry. When the time comes, I think I'll let you handle that phone call." Sandra mentioned a wedding photographer. Unfortunately, she couldn't remember the person's name, but the hotel might remember.
"And of course the groom might if he decides to sign on."
"If he signs on?" Lori said. "Don't jinx us. He's Sandra's number one suspect. He has to sign on." 13. Sandra gave her daughter one final hug in the building lobby.
I'm so proud of you, love, she said.
Mom, I'm going to see you for dinner in a few short hours. Maria, 8 o'clock. You know where it is, right?
You told me. Take Central Park South straight across, almost to Columbus Circle. I think I can manage not to get lost. It's a joy to see you twice in one day.
Sandra cherished her time with Charlotte. When she lived in Raleigh, she saw Charlotte and Henry equally, 2 to 4 times a year. Never enough, in her view. She made a point to visit Charlotte at least as often once she moved to Seattle, but if anything, the fact that she now saw Henry regularly made her miss Charlotte all the more. It was sweet of Charlotte to have spent the entire afternoon with her. After a long lunch at La Grande Vue, they walked up Fifth Avenue, perusing shop windows, and then across town until they reached Lady Form's corporate offices next to Carnegie Hall. There, Charlotte had proudly given her mother a preview of the latest designs. As Sandra walked back to her room at the Pierre, she pictured Charlotte's face at lunch when Sandra first brought up Amanda's name. In retrospect, she thought, I should have told Charlotte yesterday on the phone about my plan to go to the Under Suspicion studio. That way today could have been purely a fun day. She should have known that any mention of Amanda would put a damper on the visit. Charlotte was always comparing herself to her little sister. Even 5 years after Amanda disappeared, she was competing with Amanda's memory.
Once I told Charlotte about my meeting this morning with Lori Moran, she seemed excited, Sandra thought. And she was quick to volunteer her willingness to participate if the show got the go-ahead. A day never passes that I don't miss Amanda, Charlotte had said. But there was that moment when her face fell at the mention of her sister's name, followed by the urgent request for a martini. Charlotte is a good, decent person, but why is she so insecure, even jealous?
Sandra sighed. Charlotte's envy could bring out the worst in her. In the 7th grade, she had been suspended for tampering with another student's entry in the science fair. But no matter how jealous she had been of Amanda, Charlotte would never hurt her little sister. Or would she? Sandra, horrified that the thought would even cross her mind, felt a stinging lump in her throat. As the number 6 train lurched to a stop at the 96th Street station, Lori was replaying the conversation with Jerry in her head. He knew more about Amanda's disappearance from 5-year-old news coverage than Lori had managed to glean during a 2-hour conversation with Amanda's own mother. That's how well he knew the case. Yet he had refrained from pitching a show about his own cold case obsession because of a comment she had made months ago in Los Angeles. You look sad, he had said. I assumed. Jerry hadn't completed the sentence. He didn't need to, because he had assumed correctly. Lori's only previous visit to the Grand Victoria had been with Greg. It was their 2nd anniversary. New York had suffered an especially bitter winter. More than by the cold, Lori's mood had been affected by yet another month of passing without becoming pregnant. Her doctor told her that these things didn't always happen right away, but she and Greg had been so eager to start a family once they got married. Sensing her worry, Greg had surprised her on a Thursday night, announcing that he had arranged to take a long weekend off from the Mount Sinai emergency room where he was a resident. They spent 4 marvelous days swimming and reading on the beach during the day, enjoying long dinners in the evening. Timmy was born 9 months later.
When Greg died, I felt so alone, Lori thought. We had always pictured ourselves having 4 or 5 kids.
She loved Timmy. He was more than enough all on his very own, but she never thought he'd be an only child. But now, nearly 6 years after Greg's death, she realized that she and Timmy had never been at risk of being alone. Her father, Leo, had retired from the NYPD to help raise her son.
And my immediate family didn't stop there, Lori thought.
Grace could read her mind with one look. Jerry had known that she might not be ready to delve into a story about a young couple getting married at a resort where she'd once celebrated with Greg. Jerry and Grace were co-workers, but they were also family. And then there was Alex. I don't want to go there right now, she thought. She walked quickly the few blocks to the apartment. As she slipped her key into the front door, she felt the stress of the busy day fade away. She was home. 15. She was greeted by the smell of chicken roasting in the kitchen and the familiar sounds of cartoon fighting from the living room. Pow! Ha! Timmy was playing Super Smash Brothers on his Wii, while Leo read the sports section on the sofa. Lori had tried to restrict Timmy from these types of games for as long as possible, but even she had been forced to cave. Mario doesn't stand a chance, Lori said, recognizing one character on the screen battling her son's virtual self. Timmy unleashed a lethal kick and let out a satisfied, "Yes!" He scrambled up to hug her.
There she is, Leo said as he stood up. How was your meeting with Brett?
Lori smiled, appreciative that her father remembered that today had been the scheduled pitch. Better than I could have expected.
What was his reaction to the cases you were torn between?
Forget them. Something really terrific came up today. She gave him the short version of the surprise visit from Sandra. Do you remember the case?
Vaguely. I was still on the job back then, so there were enough crimes in New York to keep me busy.
Lori heard the musical chime of a game coming to an end, and Timmy set down his controller. Obviously, he had been listening to them.
So does this mean you're going to be leaving again?
He asked, a touch of anxiety in his voice. Lori knew that Timmy worried about her schedule. When they filmed the last special, she decided to pull him from school for 2 weeks while his grandfather watched over him on the set in California. She couldn't possibly do that for every installment.
You're going to like this one, she told him. Instead of going somewhere so far away, it's in Florida, and that's only a 2 to 3 hour flight. If the project is approved, I'm even hoping to schedule it for the next month before you go back to school.
Is there a water park?
Lori sent a mental thank you note to Grace, who had already looked up that kind of pertinent information.
Yep, they got a slide that's 40 feet high in one of the pools.
Awesome! And will Alex be there? Timmy asked. I bet he'd try the slide with me.
Sometimes Lori worried how excited Timmy was about Alex being a part of their lives. She'd made a point of not rushing their relationship, but of course earlier in the day, her mind had leapt to the same place as Timmy's, picturing herself with Alex on the beach.
Yes, she said. Alex is an important part of the show. I've checked with him. He's ready to go, and Grace and Jerry will be there too, she added.
Grace is probably chartering a private plane for all her shoes, Leo said.
I wouldn't be surprised.
2 hours later, as Lori cleared the dishes from the table, a text message from Jerry came in. He was still at the office and had contact information for everyone they wanted for the show.
Can't wait to get started, he said.
His college-aged obsession was proving handy already. As Lori thought about the various people she needed for the production, she worried that the groom and his new wife were absolutely essential. No matter what Sandra had promised, they were also both lawyers, which might make them reluctant to cooperate. Fortunately, Lori knew an excellent attorney who could be extremely persuasive. She sent a quick text to Alex, who was the guest of honor at a trial skills conference in Boston for the weekend.
Any chance you might have some time Monday night? It might take a couple of hours. It's about the show. And please bring your car. I hope we get to meet with one or two of the participants.
His response was immediate. I always have time for you. She replied, I'll call Monday morning with details. Good night, Alex. Smiling, she plugged her phone into the charger. 16. Organized chaos was the term often used by Kate Fulton when she was getting her four kids settled for the evening. The 3-year-old twins, Ellen and Jared, had finished their bath and were in their pajamas, watching a Barney video in the family room. Tonight was a good night. Their singing along with one of the jingles meant they weren't fighting. After several reminders, Jane had finally gone to her room to read before bed. Now that she was 10, she had announced she should be allowed to stay up later than 8 o'clock.
"All of my friends go to bed later than that," she had protested.
Kate had agreed to consider the request. 8-year-old Ryan was her easier one. He always had a sweet and sunny disposition. But he was also the most accident-prone, as the recently applied cast on his arm attested. He had fallen off his new bike while trying to steer with no hands. Normally, the noise of her household before bedtime would have been oddly comforting. Tonight, though, all she wanted was silence. She had too many other sounds in her head. 3 days ago, she had been shocked to receive a phone call from Sandra Pierce. Kate hadn't heard from her since the second anniversary of Amanda's disappearance. Then tonight before dinner, Sandra had called again for the third time since, saying that the producer of Under Suspicion was excited about the prospect of featuring Amanda's case. And then right on the heels, Lori Moran, the producer, had called to explain what participation in the program would involve. Sandra had offered to pay for all expenses so Kate could bring Bill and the kids. If that didn't work, she had said, she would pay for a sitter to stay at the house while Kate was away.
"My mother will be happy to stay with them," Kate had told her, "but I'll accept your offer to pay for a sitter to help."
She got up from the table. The twins had begun to bicker.
"Upstairs now, all of you," she said firmly.
The Home Depot store was conducting its annual inventory. As the manager, Bill was still there and would be until some ungodly hour. 20 minutes later, the dishwasher on and her 4 children settled, Kate sat quietly in the den over a second cup of coffee. If this production did happen, how would she feel down at the Grand Victoria again? She remembered how out of place she had felt last time. Amanda and Charlotte and Megan had seemed so sophisticated, so very New York. She had felt like a dowdy housewife next to them.
"I've loved Bill since I was 13 years old," she thought. "But sometimes I wonder how it would have been if I'd given myself a few years after college to live in New York and date other people, have some breathing room."
She took another sip of coffee.
"I never thought I'd go back to Palm Beach," she thought. "5 years ago, I committed the worst mistake of my entire life there. No one must ever know. Please, God," she pleaded silently. "Please don't let anyone know."
17. Walter Pierce opened an email from his daughter, Charlotte.
"Hope you love these as much as we do."
"We." She meant her team up there in New York City. 10 years ago, any new product would have been presented to him in his office, right here at the factory, overlooking the production floor, pencil sketches on paper. He would have been the one to decide whether it was right for lady form. Now he opened files on a computer. With the click of a mouse, he could review a digitized version from all angles, and a bunch of people whose names he couldn't remember had already expressed their approval. He clicked through images of what used to be called a sweatshirt, but was now known as a hoodie. This one's sleeves were equipped with built-in mittens that could be slipped off with the flick of the wrist. The old Walter would have picked up the phone and asked the person proposing such a silly garment to explain why anyone in the world would want mittens dangling from their clothing. But instead, he hit the reply key, typed, "Looks great, Charlotte," and sent the message. The phone rang. He recognized the number on the screen as Henry's. That was a nice surprise. Normally, Walter was the one to initiate the phone calls.
"I knew I could find you at work," Henry said.
His son's voice was cheerful, but Walter knew it was his devotion to work that explained why Henry, his grandchildren, and now his ex-wife, all lived on an opposite coast.
"I'm just about to head out. Your sister sent me a wonderful new design.
How are Sandy and Mandy?
Henry's two girls were named Sandra and Amanda, named for their grandmother and aunt.
They're a handful, both of them.
Walter smiled as he listened to his only son chatter like a proud father. He leaned back in his chair, closed his eyes, and wondered how his life might have been different if he'd been more like his son. Henry spent just as much time with his girls as his wife Holly did. He coached their soccer team, filmed their dance recitals, and cooked breakfast with them every Saturday so Holly could sleep in.
I try to tell myself that times were different back when my kids were small, Walter thought, but I know I could have been a more hands-on father.
Tell them Grandpa Walt misses them, he said, then added, do you think your mom's still doing okay out there in Seattle?
As he spoke, he rocked back and forth in his chair. It was still hard for him to picture Sandra living alone. He had looked the house up on the internet so he could at least have an image, but he'd only been inside once when she had invited him to Thanksgiving dinner. Henry was silent for a few seconds.
She's settling in, sure. That's why I was calling. She talked to you about this television show? She was very excited. Has the producer made a decision? Not yet, but Amanda's case is definitely on the radar, Henry said. I just wanted to make sure you were actually comfortable moving forward. I know how excited Mom can get. You shouldn't feel obligated.
I don't. As I told your mom, I'm proud of her for getting someone to revive Amanda's case after all these years. She's worked her heart out for this.
But do you want this?
Sure, if Mom thinks it will help.
Dad, that's what I'm worried about. Don't do this for Mom out of guilt or because you think you'll be making something up to her. I know that not knowing what happened to Amanda is what came between you.
Walter swallowed past the lump in his throat.
Your mother's the most fierce and loyal woman I've ever known. Finding Amanda has become her life's work. Trust me, if anyone understands the need to pour yourself into a passion, it's me.
Dad, I'm not talking about work. I know you're not always comfortable talking about your feelings, but how come we never talk about Amanda?
I still think about your sister every day.
I know you love her and miss her. We all do, but we never talk about her. How come you're so sure that Amanda's still out there?
I've never been sure, but that's my hope.
Every night, Walter pictured his beautiful daughter and the adventures she might be having. She had always loved to draw. Might she be a painter on the Amalfi Coast? Or maybe she runs a quiet little restaurant in Nice?
I guess anything is possible, Henry said. Then Mom says that Amanda would never leave us worrying like this, and that sounds absolutely on target, too. How can the two of you have such different opinions about what happened?
Walter opened his mouth, but no words came out. He couldn't go into it again. Then he said,
I appreciate your call, son. I'm absolutely on board about this. It'll be nice to see you in Florida.
You can miss work?
Funny. Walter thought. I agreed to do the show without even thinking about the company. I'll be out of the office as long as necessary.
He knew it had taken him too long to see the truth, that he had been a terrible father, unable to connect to his children about anything other than work.
My son, he thought, moved all the way to the West Coast to escape hearing about lady form, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Then I pitted my two daughters against each other, expecting them to both step into the family business and not giving either sufficient assurances of my approval.
He wanted to tell Henry why he believed that Amanda was out there somewhere, living a new life under a new name.
It was the only way, he thought, she could break free of me and be the person she truly wanted to be.
But he just could not admit that.
We'll talk soon, Henry was saying. Okay, Dad, bye.
As he hung up the phone, Walter wondered whether Sandra and his children would ever realize how much he really had changed in the last few years. 18. It was Monday morning, which meant that Jerry and Grace were outside Lori's office, gossiping about their weekend activities. From Lori's vantage point at her desk, she gathered that Grace had been carrying on about the strikingly good looks of her latest gentleman suitor.
"And where did you find this one?" Jerry asked.
"You say that like there have been thousands," Grace objected. "And to be clear, it's all just flirting, nothing serious. I met Mark, this one, as you called him, at the driving range at Chelsea Piers."
"You? Playing golf?"
"I'm a woman of many talents. The clothes are adorable, and so are the other players. What's not to like? Speaking of surprising attributes, is that a tan I see?"
Lori found herself paying more attention to their chatter than the memo she was drafting to the studio's marketing team. She had also noticed some color on Jerry's usually pale skin.
"I visited friends on Fire Island, and it's not a tan. Unlike you, I have two settings, pasty or sunburned."
Lori found herself smiling as she hit the save key on her computer and rose from her desk.
"Okay, are we ready for our meeting?"
Once they were settled into their usual spots, Grace and Jerry on the sofa, Lori in the gray swivel chair, she asked which of them wanted to start. She was eager to hear their reports. Normally, she was the one calling the shots in the office, but when it came to social media, she was almost oblivious. She barely understood the difference between a tweet and a status, a like and a follow. But Jerry and Grace, just a decade younger, seemed perfectly at home in the virtual world. As a convenient way to split the work in half, Lori had asked Jerry to see what he could find out about Jeff and his half of the wedding party while Grace researched Amanda's friends. Jerry seemed more than happy to go first.
"Jeff has a fairly small social media imprint, just a LinkedIn profile. That's for professional networking," he added for Lori's benefit. "And a relatively quiet Facebook page. But I have been able to confirm that he is still in close contact with both Nick Young and Austin Pratt, who are both more active online and still very much BFFs. Best friends forever."
Between Jerry, Grace, and her son, Lori was fluent in slang.
"Austin and Nick are still happy bachelors on the prowl, while Jeff has settled down in Brooklyn with his wife Megan."
Grace looked to Jerry as if surely he must have more to say.
"Is that it? I wish my job had been that simple."
"I also called the Grand Victoria. Want me to start in on that?" Jerry interrupted.
"One at a time, guys. Grace?"
"Well, since my people are more complicated," she said with a pleased smile, "I'll take them one by one. Megan White, as mentioned, is married to Jeff. She has no Facebook, Twitter, nothing. Private. The other college girlfriend was Kate Fulton. She has four kids and lives in Atlanta. Her husband is the store manager at a Home Depot. There are some old pictures on her Facebook page with Megan and Amanda, but as far as I can tell, she has no current contact with any of the old gang. We've got Charlotte, Amanda's sister, working at Lady Form here in New York, and her brother Henry is in Seattle. He's co-owner of a winery, married with two girls, at least according to his online posts."
Lori was nodding. "The three Colby men, all still in contact. Megan now married to Jeff. Amanda's family scattered across the country. Kate, the college friend, married with four children in Atlanta."
"Jerry, you heard back from the Grand Victoria?" she asked.
Her biggest worry was that the resort might not let them film on the property.
"I spoke to the corporate office today. They're eager to cooperate. Amanda's disappearance was a public relations fiasco, so my impression is that they want to help however they can. They even maintain backups of all the security camera footage they provided to police."
"Really? Is there a way we can see it?"
"They agreed to send it this week."
The pieces were all falling into place. Jeff was still close to two of his groomsmen, and obviously couldn't be any closer to Megan. If she could just get him on board, they'd all be set. And if he didn't say yes to Sandra, she had a plan to persuade him. Alex.
Nineteen.
When Lori walked out of her building at 6 o'clock, Alex was standing at the curb next to his black Mercedes. Right on time, she thought. I should have known it.
I've been waiting an hour.
Sure you have. Lori had known Alex for over a year now, but could still feel herself react every time she saw him. A former college basketball player standing 6'4", he still had an athlete's build. He had dark, wavy hair, a strong jaw, and blue-green eyes that shone even behind his black-rimmed glasses. There was a reason Alex Buckley had become one of television's most sought-after trial commentators, and it wasn't merely because of his celebrated success in the courtroom. She gave him a quick kiss. I can't believe my luck that you could join me. Alex's official role on Under Suspicion was as its host. The skills he had gained at interrogation and courtroom cross-examinations were perfect for the show's format. In previous episodes, his participation had not begun until shortly before the cameras began to roll. But since the show's last production, 3 months ago, the lines between official and unofficial had become blurred where Lori and Alex were concerned. He opened the car door for her, then walked around to the opposite side and got in next to her. Before he could ask, she handed the driver Jeff and Megan's address in Brooklyn. I may have mentioned that I always have time for you, he said mildly. Oh, come on. I can't remember the last time you left your office before 6. I'm really surprised. How come you were available on such short notice?
This is what I get for dating a journalist, the third degree, Alex laughed. I did make a scheduled trial go away by getting most of the evidence suppressed.
Dating. Of course, we're dating, she thought. There's no other word for it. Well, I'm not surprised you won, and I'm grateful for the help, she said, as he reached over and took her hand. It felt completely natural.
Okay, Lori, what's going on in Brooklyn?
Do you remember the runaway bride case?
Alex looked up briefly, scanning his memory.
Somewhere warm, beautiful hotel, Florida? Exactly, at the Grand Victoria in Palm Beach.
Whatever happened with that?
As I recall, there were two theories at the time. Either foul play or she got cold feet and took off.
Lori was realizing she was at a disadvantage for not having followed the story while it was hot.
Over 5 years without a word sounds like more than cold feet.
Nothing? No body ever found?
Lori was a journalist, the daughter of a cop, and the widow of an emergency room physician, but she still was not accustomed to Alex's matter-of-fact approach to speaking about crime. According to Amanda's mother, there have been absolutely no new developments in all these years. I got the impression that police were divided. Either she left voluntarily or was killed, but either way, they have stopped looking. It's a cold case.
Meaning right up your alley. And what's in Brooklyn?
The would-be groom, Jeff Hunter.
Lori quickly laid out the basic biography. Colby College, Fordham Law, a job with the Brooklyn Public Defender's Office since graduation.
This is when it gets interesting. She told him about Amanda's will, leaving her trust fund to her fiancé. Amanda's mother considers him our number one suspect.
Are you worried that because he's a criminal defense attorney, he'll take the fifth, so to speak, and not do the show?
Exactly. Plus, his wife's a lawyer, too. Her name's Megan White. She practices immigration law, not criminal defense, but still.
Even if he's willing, you're concerned that she'll try to stop him.
Or have her own reasons to clam up. Because here's the thing. Megan was Amanda's best friend. She was also there at the Grand Victoria, so she's a potential suspect too. Marrying your best friend's fiance 15 months after she disappeared? Seems a little quick to me. I thought since you speak their language, maybe you could help convince them to do the show.
I'm told I can be very persuasive,
but do we even know if they're home? I left a message on both their phones. Obviously, they talked to each other, and then Jeff called me back. It took a lot of persuading, but he gave the okay for us to come.
Alex leaned toward her until their shoulders touched.
Palm Beach sounds like a good place to shoot. Don't you think, Counselor? She asked him.
I couldn't agree more.
20. The converted brownstone looked just as it had appeared when Lori entered the address into Google Maps' Street View function. It was a four-story walk-up, no doorman. She pressed the buzzer for apartment B, marked Hunter White. Though Amanda's mother had referred to Megan as Mrs. Jeffrey Hunter, Lori knew Megan had retained her maiden name. She had already rehearsed her introduction. She looked at Alex nervously as seconds passed in silence. He pressed the buzzer a second time.
The intercom's broken, Ms. Moran.
The voice came from the second floor above them. She recognized Jeff Hunter, his head out the window, from the LinkedIn profile picture Jerry had shown her.
Are you Alex Buckley?
Lori could see that Jeff was astonished.
I just used your closing argument in the J.D. Martin case in a seminar for our new lawyers. Masterful stuff. Just masterful.
Alex gave him a friendly wave.
That's very flattering. Thank you. Come on up.
He tossed out a key ring, which Alex caught in one hand.
Nice catch.
As Alex unlocked the front door, Lori said, Did you see the way he looked at you? It's like he's a little kid and Derek Jeter just gave him an autograph.
That's me, the Derek Jeter of law geeks.
See, I knew you'd come in handy. Jeff was waiting for them on the second floor, apartment door open. He was just about 6 feet tall with dark brown hair and intense hazel eyes.
Come in, please. I'm Jeff Hunter, by the way, but I guess you know that.
He shook Alex's hand and then greeted Lori. To Lori's relief, Jeff seemed friendly enough as he invited them to sit in the living room. The apartment was small but comfortable, with a mix of mission style and contemporary furniture. From a quick scan of the framed photographs arrayed on the console table, she got a sense of Megan's appearance, tall and thin, with long curly black hair and sharp, angular facial features. She was the opposite of Amanda.
Megan isn't home from work yet, Jeff explained, and it's very possible she won't be home for at least another hour.
Lori had been hoping to meet both of them, but on the other hand, she knew this might be her only shot to speak to Jeff alone. On the phone you mentioned that you're familiar with the show, she began. Then you know our show isn't about singling out any one person as a suspect. It's about the ways that an unsolved crime can plague the lives of everyone around it. The uncertainty, the lack of closure.
The whispers I hear when someone recognizes my name, Hunter said bitterly.
She nodded. So you know what I'm talking about.
How could I not? I was in an absolute daze after Amanda disappeared. One day I managed to walk out for a press conference wearing two different shoes. I didn't even notice that our wedding rings were missing when I was packing up to leave. My God, I felt like I was leaving Amanda behind.
Alex interrupted.
The wedding rings were missing? Did Amanda have them? I've never heard anyone mention any kind of theft in connection with her disappearance. I have no idea what happened to them. I put them in my room safe when I got down there on Wednesday, but I admit I was very careless about locking it. A hotel employee must have taken them, but who knows? God, this is taking me back. 5 years ago, the hardest thing I ever did was to get on that plane. My friends Nick and Austin came with me to my room to help me pack, if you could even call it packing. I was a basket case. We threw my clothes, shoes, everything into the suitcase. It's possible I even tossed the rings out inadvertently. I was completely out of it. I didn't even realize I might be under suspicion, as you call it, until Nick and Austin pulled me aside and told me the cops were eyeing me as the chief suspect.
Jeff was shaking his head, remembering the moment. They convinced me I had to look out for myself. The whole story became about money, specifically how Amanda's family had it and mine didn't. Reporters were calling Amanda the lady form heiress. In comparison, I seemed like a gold digger from the wrong side of the tracks.
Is that when you hired a defense attorney? Lori asked.
Yes, my friends were looking out for me,
but I've never had anything to hide. You know, when I first saw your show, I even thought about calling you. It seemed like a way to get people talking about a man.